This is the Lay of the Land with academic and deep thinker Luba Mayakiso.
At 8:42, a very good morning to Luba Mayakiso. How do you think they're celebrating Valentine's Day at Eskom today? Candles?
Possibly, but I don't want to enter Valentine's because I'm still nursing bruises from the last time I posted on Valentine's and I was called a racist. So I want to keep out of this debate.
Oh my, no, don't you dare. Why would you have been called a racist on Valentine's Day? I can't make the link. What did you do?
Well, you know what? I thought I was helping out a few mates, so I put out a post on my Facebook page, and it was tongue-in-cheek. So I kind of said, you know, to my black brothers out there, get with the program, buy those flowers, chocolates, do the dinner dates, and pay for that treatment, facial, whatever, and don't give me the lame excuse that Valentine's is a white thing. I put it that way. And then I said, you know, to the black sisters, get with the times, you know, accept the flowers, and I know, don't be puzzled that you would have preferred something more lasting and durable, like, you know, jewelry or a perfume or something like that. But it's a thought that counts because I knew, you know, the two cultures. But goodness me, I had one person who happened to be Afrikaans who said to me, that's very racist. Then she went on and on and on and on.
I actually, for the life of me, don't even understand what you possibly... Zanati, help us.
Someone even said to the black ladies, please, man, when your man feeds you that strawberry, don't now open your mouth like you're at the dentist's office, like someone's taking out your teeth. Just bite, open your mouth slightly and just bite into a little ball.
You see, the thing is, Howard, we know our culture. I know.
But
I know.
That's the beauty. As Jews, we laugh at ourselves and we laugh at all of our ridiculousness and all of our idiosyncrasies. Why can't you do that from your own culture? I think it's
funny. No. Howard, you're missing the point. My black friends found it amusing and helpful. You know, a lot of the guys said, thank you. The lady said, wonderful. Now you're kind of shoving them in the right direction.
Right.
The person who took offense was a white Afrikaans woman who then sent me a private message and says, I never knew you were a racist. and she threatened to unfriend me. And I said, what exactly? But once we sat down and I explained it, said, oh, now I understand. And I said, but what on earth offended you in this whole thing? But she was very upset for a long while.
And it's such a pity because, you know, that's the whole point about, listen, that's when I get into trouble over and over again, is generally with humor, because humor is meant to poke fun at ourselves and each other. And as long as we do it with love and from a good place, then I really believe we should be allowed to do that.
Absolutely. But I also know that this is a struggle. So if you ask the ladies around you, generally black guys struggle with understanding that they go to buy flowers and all of those things. And I think we hype up in the African community presents where they have to be expensive, whereas a simple, even a single rose, a single card or something like that can be very romantic. So my idea was just to say to the guys, it doesn't have to be expensive, but just have some gesture. And to the ladies, don't expect the guy to get an overdraft to buy you a present. You know, it can be something small. Just go with the flow. So it was more just kind of tongue-in-cheek and say, guys, listen up, enjoy the day. Needn't be expensive, but let's get with the swing of things. But not always defer it and say, oh, it's a white thing, we can't relate to it.
Yeah, absolutely incredible. But I think, as you know, Luba, the road to hell is paved with good intentions. You of all people have come across that more than once along your journey.
Absolutely. So you wanted to talk about load shedding, about Eskom's unbundling.
Mm-hmm.
Well, look, here's a funny thing that I've been struggling with. I've been trying to understand where the president wants to go with unbundling, because he talks of breaking it up into three pieces, which is transmission, generation, and distribution. And then I ask myself, and I say, but if you have three, then you must have three separate boards and three separate executives. And part of me, Howard, wonders and says, are we looking for a solution in the wrong place? Because is it necessarily a bad thing for Eskom to remain one unit? Because we always seem to think that privatized seems to be the solution. I mean, we spoke earlier about Ethiopian Airways not being privatized and doing very well. And so when I spent some time looking around last night, you go to France and you find one heck of a big parastatal providing electricity to literally 22% of Europe, and it's owned by the French government. You know, it's got nuclear and all manner of things, and it's doing exceptionally well. It has literally revenues of 71 billion euros. And it's state-owned. It has over almost close to 1.5 million kilometers of transmission lines. It has generation capacity. It has distribution capacity. So I sometimes wonder, and I say, is it a knee-jerk reaction that we kind of say Eskom is not working? Because, again, if you do some research, you look around and you find just as recent as 2001 or so, and Eskom was being lauded internationally as kind of a benchmark and receiving accolades. And so you ask yourself and say, what has happened in that space of time? But I do believe that what Eskom has done is streamlined. It seems like at some stage Eskom had 50,000 employees, brought it down to a lower level to about 32,000. So between 2007 and 2018, Eskom went from 32,000 to 48,000, and there lies a problem. So are Eskom's problems that it needs to be broken down and bundled, or is it just exceptionally poor management? We've allowed the headcount to grow up, to escalate, and we've allowed, we've got capacity that isn't being used. I mean, I was listening to an interview this morning, and my own research has, you know, has yielded that Eskom has more capacity than we need. We have about 45,000 megawatts of capacity. We need demand right now, today, yesterday, this week, is 30,000. So it's within the capacity of Eskom, but we're not, you know, either through not having enough diesel or systems or units being off, we can't produce that. And so why aren't we putting enough electricity? Why don't we have enough diesel? Why do we have systems that are off that should be properly maintained? So is the solution necessary to unbundle it? Because if you unbundle Eskom, what's the choices bit? You're going to look at a generation and say, we have these power stations, nuclear or coal or whatever, and try and sell that. But if your company is performing so badly with so much debt, can you honestly find somebody who will invest in Eskom at the right price? Or will people want to discount you and say, look, you're riddled with debt, it's inefficient, I'm not paying the going rate for this thing? That's the problem. And then on the other side, you've got distribution. You know, I spent some time around about 2003 to about 2004, when the ANC government wanted to unbundle distribution from Eskom, and this rollout was going to start in Cape Town. So I sat on the board of that entity. Eskom fought it tooth and nail, and the municipalities fought it tooth and nail, because the other jewel in this whole thing is distribution, because that's where you make money. And everybody wants distribution. So I'm not sure if it will make sense to unbundle them. I know everybody thinks it's the right way to do it. But as I think, out of desperation, we kind of clutching at the nearest solution without really thinking it through and saying, is this what we really need? And why are we not addressing the inefficiencies in Eskom?
Right. Unsigned says the following, and I've posed the same question a few times this week. Not Unsigned, Moshe. He says, hi, Luba, isn't it a coincidence that the same week that Cyril discusses unbundling of Eskom, suddenly there are six power stations going down? Doesn't it sound like a bit like sabotage?
Look, I don't know enough of Eskom to know, but it does worry me, because remember, initially Eskom hit us with stage three, and their response was, we've got seven units that are off, and therefore we don't have enough capacity. So we understood that. The following day, they turned around and say, well, those seven units that were off are now back online, but we don't have diesel. Now, if you weren't running seven units, how on earth did you have a shortage of diesel? So the excuses that Eskom gives do not make a great deal of sense. I know previously there were hints that there is possibly some sabotage taking place. You see, for me, it boggles the mind, because even if you've had people leave, we've been operating fairly fine. And when this load shedding comes, it's very interesting. It's very bizarre. I can explain certain things, such as the debt, the staff. You can explain Medupi, Kusila being behind schedule. But certainly the timing of it is very curious, and the answers are never satisfactory. So I think, there's no evidence that there's sabotage, but no. Certainly it does raise that question.
But also it's important to remember that we, that, when the Zuma faction was pushing towards the Russian nuclear deal, we saw a tremendous amount of load shedding there as well to almost create this, this crisis, this mini crisis. So we know that Eskom is not above this sort of thing.
I would say they're not because, I mean, they'll probably lynch me for this, but when I sat on the board of Red here in Cape Town in the early 2000s, as I mentioned earlier, Eskom was asked to explore the idea of gas, of renewable. And their conclusion was it's not feasible. And what people were saying to me was that Eskom was not immune to building a test program that was specifically designed to fail. So the results would validate their answer that no, we don't want to go there. So I've seen them do bizarre things like that in the past, and to prove their point or to remain a coal-fired, you know, entity. So I wouldn't put it past them. I wouldn't put it past them at all. But remember, Howard, we had December. The executives were told your leave is cancelled, and December went swimmingly. Everything went well. So then you have to ask yourself and say, why were there no challenges in December when leave was cancelled, when they were told man your stations and stay at your desks?
Absolutely. Really, really interesting. And certainly I believe that we'll be having this conversation on an ongoing basis as we try and work out what on
earth. Before I run, though, what are you planning for your Valentine?
I know we're not very big Valentine's people necessarily. Although... I've devoted this show to my wife. There we go. What, David, why are you laughing? It's like you're not taking me seriously. What?
Can I offload and tell you something that's got me really baffled?
Yes.
I've got a 14-year-old who goes to an all-girls school. It's always been an all-girls school from year dot. But it's become so PC. First of all, she comes back and she says, Dad, the girls refuse to be referred to as the girls. They will now want to be referred to as students because some of them don't want to identify as girls.
Oh, for goodness sake. You've got to get out of Cape Town, Luba. Get out of Cape Town.
So now they're fighting the tag girls school. They're saying it must just be whatever school. And I'm saying, but you are all girls. And she's saying, no, but some of them are upset. And they said they don't want to identify as girls. So lo and behold, today is Valentine's. So yesterday she comes back upset saying, well, we have a debate and some of them are thinking that this is not a good thing. Because what if the, you know, yesterday was a matric dance and there was a big argument around what if I don't want to bring a boy? And usually you had the boys coming from the nearest boys school handing out invitations. And some girls were offended because what if I don't want to bring a boy? So today she gets into an outfit and then says, oops, I'm going to be told it's too sexist because I can't wear a skirt and this and this and this. And I said, my child, I'm getting worried. I think you guys are taking this too far. If suddenly you can't celebrate Valentine's and you can't celebrate the fact that you're a young girl, you've got to dress in a somehow politically correct way. And the school is struggling. The school has written to the parents and they're grappling with it. And the crazy thing is we're talking of 13, 14, 15 year olds. And I don't understand. I am completely at a loss and I'm saying it is a girls' school. But what do we do? Do we now change everything? Because some people say, well, I don't think I'm a girl, but they're in a girls' school or I don't want to identify as a girl.
Wow. I actually feel so sad for them, actually. I feel sad for the girls, dare I say it, at this girls' school. What do you think, David?
How is it troubling? It's troubling.
Very, very troubling, David.
I just think we overthink things. I remember when I was studying sociology at Wits and I opened a door for a particular young lady and I got a mouthful. And really, it could either be interpreted as I'm showing you respect, you could open the door for me, but I'm opening the door for you. But it was interpreted as, why do you think that I'm not capable of opening my own door? So I think, again, we've got to just...
So what did you say? Because it looks like you're used to having doors slammed in your face.
I think I was a bit shell-shocked at the time.
Okay, fine, yeah.
But again, you know, just let's be who we need to be. Let's own who we are. And understand that we're all on the same side.
Yeah. Well, in fact, unsigned Luba says, will boys identifying as girls now be allowed to come to the same school?
You see, where I threw a curveball at her, and I said to her, my child, let's imagine you now finish high school, you get to varsity, and some guy decides that I'm classifying myself as a girl, which is now he's entitled to do, and he wants to stay, because we had this at UCT, then he wants to stay at an all-girls race. And I said, now what do you say? And then he says, you know what, you have shared ablution facilities, so when it's shower time, I want to come and take a shower with all the girls. And I said, you know, that can happen. And I said, this is how far this can go. And I said, this is the trouble that I have. But what I'm struggling with Howard is that you've got to be so politically correct. And the way these children are being bombarded, it's even difficult to engage with my own daughter because she kind of feels that she has to toe the line at school with the other girls. And when we discuss this thing, she quickly shuts me down and says, Dad, it's their prerogative. And I say, look, it's fine. It's their prerogative. But can a minority now overturn and change the whole school? So the school must lose girls. Now you can't refer to them as girls. What on earth do you refer to them as?
You know, I think what's going to happen is that institutions are going to have to take a stand and say, look, this is, you know, whereas we will try and accommodate, this is who we are. And if you aren't comfortable with that, then we fully, obviously respect your right to go to another school. But otherwise,
the pressure is great because my wife said, I will go to that meeting and voice my opinion. My daughter said, Mom, please no. I don't want to be embarrassed and be there almost the freaky kid.
As unscientific says Luba, this is a direct result of social media overexposure. And there's no doubt about that. Zanati, your thoughts?
I completely agree. I mean, the conversations that people have on social media aren't the conversations that we have in our
in real life.
That's the thing.
That's a very good point.
And it's just completely taken over.
That's a very, very good point.
And I think also too much information and too much regurgitation and introspection can actually be a bad thing. Some things shouldn't be overthought, and things become way too complicated that they need to be. You know, if
for example, a matric dance. Nobody said you have to go with a boy if you're a girl. Nobody's ever said that.
I don't think any school necessarily would object if a girl decided that she wanted to go with another girl.
No, Howard, you see, what happens is that generally the boys from their brother school would literally come onto their school and hand out the invitations. And now being kids, they might come dressed kind of like with revealing tops or topless, whatever. Now the first issue was we don't want the boys coming in. If they do come, they need to dress appropriately and cover themselves and cover their muscles and their biceps and things. But that's been the tradition. Because I might not be attracted to a boy. This is the issue now. But why is a 14-year-old having this discussion?
Absolutely. Mm.
I think it comes down to oversensitivity. And I know it sounds so weird coming from a psychologist, but let's not be so oversensitive. Let's not overthink things.
Yep. And life has got complicated.
It really, really has.
It's complicated.
And like the Eskom story, I have no doubt that this conversation will continue. It is 9 o'clock. Luba Mayekisa, thank you. As always, David Abramson, thank you for a most enjoyable hour with you. The only thing that I do have to say is that I think your choice of music was completely and absolutely appalling, but better luck next week. It's 9 o'clock. You have a fantastic throwback Thursday. If you're doing something for Valentine's Day, go on and do it. Go and have fun. That's what it's all about. It's 9 o'clock.